I'm here in the centre of Blessington and I'm talking to Christy Sargent. And Christy, tell me now, you're a man with a very interesting story. I'm born, I suppose, back at nearly at the beginning of the last century. You're
1919, I was born.
1919.
Yeah.
And tell me, growing up here, because your mother was from Dublin and she was a Cairns, isn't that right? And how did your mother meet your father, do you know? Did you ever...
Well, I was about a mile and a half outside the town here. There was an uncle and my mother lived. And she used to be out on holiday in his place. That's how they met.
And all those years ago.
Yes.
And you're, I suppose, growing up in Blessington back in the 1920s and 30s, what was it like? What was this place like?
Of course, I wasn't from Blessington. I lived about 3 miles outside the time that the people had to be 3 miles from any pub before they could drink. You know, the bona fide.
Right.
The bona fide.
Yes.
So you had to live 3 miles from your nearest pub before you could drink in that pub.
And was that important? It was.
Oh, yes. Oh, very important. And it was very well, very strict as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the name of the place that you grew up in, that your father lived in?
Ratmore. Yeah. Near Ratmore, yeah. Ratmore was the address.
What was your dad's name, your father's first name?
His first name was Samuel.
Samuel. What did he do for a living?
He worked with a horse for the Kildare County Council. And, you know, just drawing stones or drawing gravel or something from one place to another, one depot to another, you know, that way.
Yeah.
At that time, they had to make the road. There was no tar macadam around at that time. So they used to fill potholes with gravel. And that was like, well, heavy, yeah.
So he worked for the council?
Yes.
And he carted, cart loads of gravel and stone and...
Well, over the years.
Yeah.
Like, there were several other people as well. Like, it was common because they had no other means of transport at that time.
Yeah.
And they used to cart loads of gravel and that for maybe 5 or 6 miles that time. There wasn't that many pits open as there is today.
Where was he drawing the stone from?
Well, it'd be whoever the nearest gravel pit belonging to the council, wherever that'd be. That could be 4 or 5 miles away. It could be only a mile away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many in your family with you, Christy? How many brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers and two sisters. And one brother was murdered when he was 20.
What happened?
Fella hit him on top of the head with a bar where he was walking. And, you know, and that same fella only got 3 years and was out again. Wouldn't happen today.
Yeah.
No. But my mother lived for 30 years after, but she never got over it, never.
Yeah.
No.
It took a great effect. Where was your brother working?
He was working in a gravel pit out about 2 miles from our own house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you, I suppose when you were growing up here, did you go to the local school where did you go to school?
I went to school in Ratmore School. I was 6 and a half when I went to school in September, and I left school about, I suppose, a month or 6 weeks before I was 14, and went into a pits green in the sand for a plaster around Crumlin.
Is that where you start to work at the age of 14?
Yes, and I was in the pits after I stayed in the pits I went to different men that I met. I worked in Lyons's a Kill, and that was the man that used to ride the motorbike at the he won won several big races on a motorbike. And then I was in, I finished, I was in Roadstone for about 38 years.
Oh, that was, they held on to you for 38 years, yeah.
Well, there was no problem,
yeah,
because they were a great firm to work for, because you got paid for every 15 minutes you worked.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
And going back to your first job, you know, when you were 14, and what exactly were you doing?
Screening sand through a quarter-inch screen.
All day long?
For plaster.
Yeah.
Well, not all day long. You'd screen out the load, and then you'd wait till that maybe be only one lorry drawn into Crumlin at that particular time.
Yeah.
One man would have the contract.
Yeah.
The pit I was working in was only out about a mile and a half from the town here.
Oh, was it indeed?
That's
yeah.
All. Yeah. Near my home, only a mile from where I lived.
Well, so that was very, very useful going back.
Yes.
But what about transport generally? Did you ever take the tram, you know, when it was coming out from town?
Well, you see, on account of my mother being born in Kimmage, where the tram was in Ternure was only what they used to call a half mile. And it was known as the Half Mile Road. And that's how we were often on the tram at least once a week. Like, because my mother would be going home. And then when I was about 10, I travelled on it myself. I go myself to Ternure and walk across to my aunt's.
Now, this would have been in 1920.
Well,
5 or 6 or something?
20, maybe 26 or 7,
yeah.
Onwards.
What was it like? Describe to me what it was like, the tram.
Well, it was a bit rockety, you know, a bit rocky, but comfortable enough for the time it was. You wouldn't feel it, especially if there was somebody else on the tram with you that you were talking to. You didn't feel the journey to Ternure, even though it used to take the tram an hour and a half to get from Blessington to Ternure, because it had so many stops, and it being a steam tram, it had to take water at different intervals along the road, and then the stop for passengers and so forth.
Was it busy? Were a lot of people using it?
It was the only means of transport. Like, there was no buses that time. No buses over here, anyway. And it was great.
Was it noisy?
Well, you wouldn't hear it when you were in the carriage. You wouldn't hear it. But it would be noisy, like, if you were outside listening to it. But it wasn't noisy. They had deaf in your hand.
Yeah.
No.
And how many years did you travel in the tram? How many years were you using
it? I travelled on it for about 12 years.
Did you?
I did. And that was the reason why, because on account of my mother living in Kimmage, it was handy to get down to Ternure and walk across to where my mother lived. And we at least, you'd be down with either her or my father once a week.
How much was the fare, do you know? Can you
Well, at that time, the fare from here was a shilling and twopence. That's in that money that time. And I used to travel for 7 pence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was them years.
And do you ever remember an incident when it when something happened, when it stopped, or for some reason it was derailed or came off the track? Or did you ever remember any story?
Well, it's very seldom the tram ever broke down, but it was, there were a lot of people killed on the tram line from here to Terton Ewer. Especially, we say now, all men that come out of the pub here at night and they'd walk up there and they'd see the tram, there was ditches along, and they'd throw themselves down in the ditch and probably wouldn't be in far enough and they'd get killed on the line. It was known as the longest graveyard in Ireland. There used to be nearly always brought to a pub in Temple Oak, which was called the Dead Man's. And I think it's probably still that name, the Dead Man's.
It's known as the morgue today.
The morgue, yeah, morgue, yeah.
You know, I suppose that was amazing, wasn't it, that happened, that fellas would, so they would lie in the ditch, and but they wouldn't be back in far enough from the track, is that it?
Well, they wouldn't be, they'd have a few pints on them and they wouldn't know, and they would think they were safe enough where they were, but the tram went along beside the ditch, like, and they could probably roll out when they go to sleep or that, but there were several people killed on it.
In fact,
there was a conductor killed on it 2 or 3 days before it went off the line, crossing between the carriages from one carriage to another, where the coupling was.
Yeah.
And he missed his step and was killed. But there were several people killed. That time there was several people killed on the line, and animals. It was animals that had stray in on the line, and they'd be, several animals were killed on it.
Do you know the names of the driver of the tram at the time that used to come out here?
Well, one man was Christy Preston from, I think he was from around Halla, and Tom Sullivan. And then the conductors, they were, well, I didn't, at that time I was too young to know or mind what their names were.
Yeah.
But I remember, I'd know them now if I met them and or that, but there was one man by the name of Dalton, he was a conductor, and there was a man by the name of Jones was a conductor. But now, after that.
Yes, well, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
And so it was something that, I suppose, it brought the people from the countryside, from Blessington here, into the city, into Talla and Terton Ewer.
Yes.
Was there a change over there, or was there...
Well, they'd have to get a bus then, or there was electric trams that time. They get a tram down the city, down into the city. There was an electric tram for going at that particular time. And it was great, because especially around Christmas time, that was the most usual time for people to be going to Dublin, because people used to keep turkeys in that same time, and they'd be going into the market with them, and they'd get them to Terton Ewer on the tram, and then they'd get the electric tram or go the rest of the way. The poem about it, about the bona fide weekends, the tram would be loaded, maybe 2 or 3 wagons coming to do the bona fide in Pool of Fuca, especially on a weekend, holiday weekend. Great.
Do you know that poem?
No, I don't know. I don't know it, no.
The local sand pits out here.
Yes.
The tram used to stop and...
Would be a depot for the wagons at the end of the lane that came down from them pits. And the pit owners would bring sand down in by a horse and cart and fill it. And when they be full, then the tram would take it away, take them away. And then when I come to Tertnure, there was two or three people around there in the area that had horses to bring it down along the city. And there was a lot of horses used in Dublin that time for bringing cart in around the city. Like, there was buses, but there was no actually transport. There might be in a few lorries, but the when they bring the sand from here, it was mostly horses that took it away from the depot in Tertnure. Yeah.
Well, I'm here in Hennessy's pub, and they've just shown me an original tram ticket. Is this familiar to you? Do you remember that's exactly what you would have got now?
Yes, and they had a... That wouldn't be the ordinary one. The ordinary one was about that size.
Just
half the size of that.
That's about
what
3 inches.
So what was that one issued for, Ronan?
That was the fair between here and Tertnure, and it was about 12 or 14 stopping off points.
Yeah.
And it was a penny between any two stops.
So if you were going between two stops, it would cost you a penny. That's what that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's interesting, though. Sorry, I'll give that back.
Very.
Again, there. Everything moved much slower in those days, you know.
Of course. An hour and a half now to go from here to Tertnure.
Yeah.
But that'd be including stops and getting putting in for water as well. You know, but I'd take it that length of time.
You'd need great patience, wouldn't you?
People didn't mind it because they were delighted to have it.
I suppose it really marked the end of an era when the tram closed down in 1932.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time?
Oh, well. Yeah, well, I remember it. But I didn't travel on it. I didn't travel on it for about a week before it closed down.
And would you have noticed, you know, kind of, the noise, you know, because you got so used to the sound of the tram coming in and waiting for it. And then all of a sudden there was no, you know, that was another.
And it had a whistle that it used to blow. Blow now somewhere about 4 or 5 miles before it had gotten to what we call the Cross Chapel stop. And people that would be there, they'd know that it was within 5 miles of it from the whistle would go at night time. They'd see it coming.
You'd hear it from that distance?
Oh, yes, you would. Oh, would yes. You? It was, it was powered by whatever was in the, it's maybe by steam or something. It was powered by something because it was fairly loud.
Yeah. And then, you know, when it all kind of closed down, was there somebody who actually tried to make a few bob and keep some kind of transport going by making a mixture of a tram and a bus? And
well, like, that was a little...
This is a photograph now I have here of that time.
Well, that only ran in the afternoon, we say, maybe... For I don't know what it was, the reason of it, but it was on the right, still on the track, you know.
The tracks were still there.
Oh yes. Well, the tracks were there. They were taken up by degrees. Yeah.
And who was the enterprising man? Who was the man that taught up the idea of?
Well, I wouldn't have a clue.
You don't know who he was.
I was too young to know.
Did you ever go on that, Christy? Did you ever go on that makeup of a bus?
The afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
It seemed to have all glass up on the top. And
it was like a miniature bus.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Christy, moving on to your own life again, you were an athlete when you were a youngster. You were a good runner.
Yes, and the only thing about it was when I was 18 or 20 and on, I was walking from 8 in the morning till 8 at night. But there was very little room for training. The only time we'd get to training would be on a Sunday morning.
Or were you with a club or were you on your own?
Ness Athletic Club. Ness Athletic Club.
Were you?
Yes.
And when did you join them? What year do you know?
I joined them in 1939.
And were you good? I mean, did you win any major?
I won a few things, yeah, but I enjoyed it. I'd run every Sunday, either ways, and I didn't matter. I'd go I wasn't interested if I didn't win. It was the exercise and meeting the company is what I was more. And I met great people along the line.
Did you know?
And
what kind of races? What distance? Were you a long distance runner or cross country runner?
Well, I like the ones anything from 2 to 6 miles. I wasn't a good sprinter.
Yeah.
So the Millbrook Cup is a race that the Nath Athletic Club has it since in the 20s. They run what's known as Walking Sunday in Punchestown. It's the Sunday before the big meeting in April. And that race was run like from in the 20s somewhere. And it was the big thing for the club, that race. Everyone wanted to win the Millbrook Cup. But still runs, Walking Sunday, the Sunday before Punchestown is still in operation.
But did you win that race 1 year?
No, I never won it.
Did you not?
I started from scratch about 4 times, and I never won it.
Yeah, but no. Like you said, you enjoyed the competition and being there.
Oh, I enjoyed the competition, and they were all good sportsmen that were in it at that particular time, because no matter who won it, they'd be congratulated.
Yeah.
Yeah, great atmosphere was good. But it was great.
But, yes.
To be a member of a club like that time was brilliant, because you had somewhere to go for the weekend, and it was very good. And I'm still a member of the club, even though I've got past that stage now.
But you still love the sport, and
yeah.
Was there a record that you hold at all, Christy? You know,
is it all that record for the fastest time for the Millbrook, but I never won it.
But you won. How's that now?
Well, the handicap it beat you.
All right.
Yeah.
What did you run it in? Can you remember the time?
I run ahead something under 32 minutes, something under 32. Yeah, I couldn't make the actual figures, I couldn't make.
I know, yes, but, well, that was a great achievement, yeah. Indeed, it was.
Well, yeah, there was, the last time I run it, there was 4 of us together off scratch. Yeah. And that was the year I put up the fastest time. Yeah. Yeah. But you see, fellas that wouldn't, maybe it's like in everything, maybe they wouldn't be given their go on during the year playing for a for a handicap.
Yeah.
But that was all in a day of sport.
It was, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
How many years are you going to Punchestown races?
If I live until April this year, I'd be 85 years going to it. Because, and tell you how that happened. When I was born, Your parents was the only, that was the only 2 days they had for the year. That was their annual holiday. And it was a national holiday around here that time. Shops would be closed, the banks would be closed, the schools would be closed. And I have, the Lord of mercy, my father, I often heard them saying, if a house goes a fire while we're away, if my burden away, there'd be no one to put it out.
Everybody was at the races.
Yes, everybody. But that was the every mother and father in the country, that was their 2 days out for the year at that time. And it was all like, you had every mode of conveyance. You had ponies in carts, you had horses in traps, bicycles. And I walked to Punchestown for, I suppose I walked for 7 or 8 years. Because it was only 5 miles from where I lived.
Yeah.
And when the school would be shut, you'd be going, and you wouldn't be a mile down the road until you'd meet other pupils there. And by the time we got to Punchestown, it could be 20
in the park. It was always the end of April, wasn't it? Was it any other date ever?
Well, there'd be plenty of racing in it during the year. There's even the meeting in it today.
Today being the end of February, yeah.
It depends on. There'd be meetings in it during the year, like other than. But the April one was the meeting.
Oh, yeah. That was that was the one that everybody would go out.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are the changes in Leopardstown Racecourse that you would have seen over 85 years?
Well, the only changes I see in Punchestown now is that it's enclosed now. In them, our young days, for years, you could walk anywhere through Jordan and go from jump to jump, different races, which you can't do today because there's no outside. It's enclosed. There's no, you can't walk, you can walk the course any time you like, but there's no racing. But race days, you're not allowed out on the course, which I suppose is only right because it's too dangerous. And with the crowds, it'd be even bigger now, so it'd be worse. But it's all right, it's still enjoyable.
But did that mean that you could get near the jump and you could watch the horse jump
over? Oh, you could be beside
over.
It. Yeah. That time.
And is that what you did? You stood beside
it? Oh, yes. You'd be beside the jump, but you wouldn't be in the horse's path.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you'd be make sure that you weren't near them. But it was a thrill, like, looking at them jumping.
Yeah. What were the jumps like? How big were they? Or
well,
what were they made of?
Well, mostly they were bank jumps. Then the stone wall was made with round stones, round. That was where a lot of people go to look at the stone wall, or they go to look at the big double.
What was the big double now?
The big double was they jumped up on to a bank, and there was a drop of about maybe 20 feet down onto the ground. They jump off of it down again.
Were horses, would they get injured, or did the jockeys get injured?
There was one or two, I suppose, over the years that I remember. Got killed, broke their leg, or when the horse breaks his leg, there's no, can't be refixed. And that he had put down. But the different ways there was several horses killed over the years, but it's the same with any other race meeting.
Yeah.
That's not Punchestown alone. It's just a horse would break his leg on the flat.
What did the races mean for you? Why did you go to the races? What was the attraction, really?
Well, everybody else went. The whole country went. And you meet people there maybe you wouldn't see from one meeting to the next. And it was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
And they were great. And like, they used to have little stands there with the people with thrown rings. And where there'd be little things like a jug, and you got 10 shillings if you put the, if you got a ring on one of the boots. You wouldn't have a hole because they were solid. And the minute the ring hit them, to hop off them. Once in a while, somebody might do it. But still, it was great. Because the very thought of 10 shillings that time, you'd be kind of a small millionaire. Yeah.
What about the three-card trick?
They had their day too.
Yeah,
they had their day. And it looked simple looking enough when you'd see them doing it. But, the you know how they say the quickness of the hand deceives the eye.
Yes. So, did you have hawkers at the races, you know?
Oh, yes. And, yes, a lot of them came out from Dublin, especially the inner city. And they were brilliant. Great. Like, you'd never be short if you wanted a cup of tea and had no money. You got a cup of tea either way off of those ladies once you knew them. And like youngsters, children used to get little bones off of them and just for the sake of keeping them quiet and that.
Yes.
But they were great people. Not so many of them now. But still, there's a few of them there still, and they are great too.
What were any idea who they were? What were the names of the hawkers? Do you know what the?
I'd forget the names of them, but I'd know them the minute I'd see them.
Yes. Well, what were they selling? Clothes and?
No, fruit and mostly fruit and teas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Sandwiches and. And all kinds of sweets and cakes. Yeah, great. And then coming near the last, when they want to get sure of a night, bring them back to Dublin, they'd be putting some of them together and sell them off in, rather than bring them back into the sea.
And that's where you pick up a bargain.
Oh, yes. Now, they were very decent people. Yeah.
So the races were really a carnival atmosphere, was it? You know, between everything, between the fellows playing the games and the.
In my young days, if you didn't go to Punchestown, there was something radically wrong with you. Yeah.
What about betting on horses then? I mean, I know you didn't have a lot of money, but would you put the odd bet on a horse?
I'd back a horse in every race.
Would you? Would you spare up your money so for the event? Or?
Well, you went in with a certain amount of money and that's what you had. And if you lost it, well and good, you'd try and get it back the next day. And if you didn't, then you'd have to wait until you had the money again. But it's much more money circulated in racing today because they have the money. We hadn't got it. You had a few shillings and that was it.
So if you lost a race, it was a hard thing to take, was it?
Well, it happened to me twice in my lifetime that I know of. I backed the winner of a race, and when I went to go get paid after the last race, the bookie was gone. And that was when I was young, and my father, I remember, put on a shilling and a horse for me, a 4-1, and he won. And that bookie was gone. Well, if I had got that 5 shillings, I'd be a millionaire going to Punchestown the next day. It didn't work out, though.
Imagine.
Yeah, but that's what makes the fun of it. And it, you're the same as anybody else. Everybody backs to win, but they don't win all the time. And you get a tip for a horse and so he might be in the first dozen.
Would you be a good judge yourself of horses?
Pardon?
Would you be a good judge yourself?
Well, I'd study the form, like what he was after doing, prior coming up to that, and you'd have a go. Then you use your own intelligence in that respect. You'd be thinking you'd be right for sure. But you know, trainers don't train horses for the police.
I just saw you blessing yourself after having a cup of tea there, and people were very religious, weren't they?
Years ago. Like we say now, during Lent, at that time, people that strictly wouldn't eat meat, and they wouldn't eat this, they used to keep it very strict that time, which has gone out the door now. It's not as strict.
And what about the processions here coming through Blessington? You know, the Corpus Christi and
it was always held different functions to celebrate the whatever was taking place. Oh well, it might do it now the thing about it now is there's too many attractions. That time, you had something like that to keep you going, and you meet somebody, it was great. But now, there's too many attractions for the youth today. They don't have to go do these things.
You can be off doing other things, and
oh yes,
and that's what. And yeah. A lot of attention was paid to the decorating the windows and putting out statues and
oh yes,
all of that. Did that happen here too?
Oh yes, it did happen here. And it's not dead altogether, you know. There's still many people still uphold that
tradition.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks be to God, they have a few people that keeps the thing going, and they get good support.
Was there a local band in the village, in the town?
There was a band here one time, up to maybe 15 or 20 years ago there was a band, yeah.
And were they a pipe band or?
They were a brass band.
A brass band, yeah. Yeah. And who was the leader of the band? Who were the band members, do you know? Or do you remember who they were?
No, because I know them, but see, I was living 3 miles away from the town here, so I wouldn't be implicated. And I wasn't in any band.
Yeah.
So I'd know them if I met them out, who they were and that. But I wouldn't know a lot of the band men in them times.
Would you remember them being good? You know,
oh, remember.
Great.
They were great.
Players, yeah.
Great. And that time, they had there were small bands, you know, with 3 or 4 that played at dances at night. And dances that time beyond maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Yes.
Where was the dance hall?
Up at the top of the town here. The old band hall is still there. Actually, there's some man has taken over now and training boxers in it. They asked the old band hall, then where you were there, that was a great hall there where you were a few minutes ago.
It's the daycare centre now, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah. That hall, yeah.
Yes.
You know, growing up, I suppose, and being part of the community here, do you think that same community is do you think it's getting broken up a little bit or
no it's a more or less on a bigger scale because there's more people in it and this town now they cater for all from school children up
but is the community spirit still alive here?
Oh yes, it's still alive yes and a lot of people there's a lot of people, there's a lot of work for to keep those things going. They cater for all ages, all along the line, different people. There's nobody left out.
You were brought up in an era, I suppose, when there was very little around, very little money. Certainly there was no electricity, there was no radio, there was no... Not too many cars on the road. Different time altogether, wasn't it?
Oh, different time. I remember years ago, There wasn't very many people had a radio, and mostly public house would have a radio, and we, for an all Ireland, you'd go to that public house and you'd be standing outside, the radio would be out in the window, and it would be 50 people there listening.
It would, you know, draw that many people, yes.
Yes. But still, they got by just the same. Yes.
And the radio, of course, was something that had brought the news quicker, and people were much more aware of what was happening
Well, of course,
quicker, you know, with the radio.
There was daily papers, and there was always that time there was a lot of small post offices, rural ones. And if you wanted to know anything, you got to the post office and you get first class information if you needed something. Yeah, you knew it was going to circulate from one house to the other, you know.
Word to mouth.
Oh, yes.
But in the post office, you had the telephone, eh? Or did you? Or was it telegram mostly?
Mostly, yes, mostly. Yeah, mostly.
But that's where the news was. If you wanted to find out something, you went to the post office.
You went to the post office, or you might go to a Garda barrack. They might know. But seeing how news like that used to get round just the same. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about, you know, horses were doing all the work in the towns and dragging and carting stuff from one place to another. But blacksmiths, you had a blacksmith here in the town?
Yes.
Was that a good meeting place?
Well, of course it was, but that time I seen the blacksmiths up here, Johnny Turtle, and I often seen six or seven horses there waiting to be shod. That man could be working all day from early morning, maybe till late around 9 o'clock at night. That time, everyone had every farmer had a horse or two, and local people had ponies, and travelling people had ponies, and they'd be in for a set of shoes now and then. And we always kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah, always. Yeah, that. People worked hard them days for little money. Yeah, but still they got by. And you could go where you liked, when you liked, because you can't do today. That makes the difference. But that's it.
Yeah. You said that you could go anywhere you wanted to. Is that because people would help you out to, you know, that people were generous with their time?
Oh, very. Oh, yes. But most people in the area, they kept a horse and they have a trap for that horse, or they kept a pony, and they were able to get from A to B under their own steam, or they could go maybe 3 or 4 miles, wouldn't be anything for them. But then, if you wanted to go further, there was people with cars for hire, and you'd never be stuck. And there was always a good neighbour knocking about as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And who was the hackney driver locally here?
Well, there was Kelly's had a they had a garage, and they'd have cash for hire, and there was 3 or 4 more people in the town just kept a taxi. You'd never be stuck, and they hadn't one for you, they were able to contact somebody else that had. You'd never be stuck for transport.
And that was before the war years. Or no, I mean, that was after the war years now, wasn't it? That was in the 50s and 60s, was it?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But what about the war years? Do you remember the emergency period? And
During the war, that was from about, it broke out in 1939 until about
45 is when it finished.
Yeah, 45. I went to Belfast. There was no much walk around here. I went to Belfast for a period during that.
Did you?
I did. There was a lot of people around. I met a lot of local people that I didn't know was up there at all. It was good money to be earned in that time.
What were you doing?
I was working in different with builders, and I was working with a crowd that was building shelters on the streets of Belfast during the bombing. And I was in a place one night, and the air raid sirens went, and the landlady fell down on the floor. She got, you know, people got a terrible fright when the air went, because you didn't know what the bomb was, the next one was for you. But met great people up there too. Great. Yeah.
And were you scared yourself? Were you worried when you heard the siren going off? And
pardon?
Were you afraid yourself of the bombs?
Oh, not a bloody bit. Because I always had it in my head, if you were to go, you were same here. If you're to go here, you'll go just the same. Nothing will stop you. So the same was up there. If you were to be hit, you were going to be hit, and that was it.
Yeah.
So you didn't think of it that way. Oh, there was thousands of people up around the north that time, where there was plenty of work. Yeah.
How long did you stay up there for?
I stayed about 2 years, I think, up and down. But I earned good money. I lost it all at the dogs. Yeah.
But you were young and foolish in those days.
Oh, I didn't mind.
Yeah. Were you married at that stage?
No, I wasn't. No.
When did you get married?
I got married in 1952. I got a brilliant. I got a great wife. We were lucky.
What was her name?
Teresa was her name. And great. Great. Brilliant. But then she got the big C.
Oh, and it knocked her out.
Knocked her out, yeah. And she always said over the years, I don't care what I die from as long as I don't get cancer. And that's exactly what killed her. But she didn't know any for about 3 weeks before she died, because you couldn't tell her she had it.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
Was that long ago?
13 years this year.
So 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Did you have a family?
Oh, yes. I had 4 sons and a daughter. And they're all round still. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they're around to look after you and mind you, I suppose, and to take care of you.
Oh, no trouble in that respect. None of it.
Yeah. No. You're a very independent man, I'd say.
Well, I don't mind living as long as I'm no encumbrance to anyone. Mm. But if it was an encumbrance to anyone, I'd rather be gone.
I'd say you're definitely not that anyway.
No. Well, that's the way. You don't know. You can't plan now from day to day.
You can't, I suppose.
No, you
really
can.
Yeah. Well, Christy, it was lovely sitting down here and talking to you and listening to your story.
Well, it's nice talking to you too. Yeah.
So, Christy Sargent.
Yeah.
Thank you again very much. Yeah.
Yeah.